Good morning. Good morning out there. And welcome to the original Loretta Brown Show, radio to open the heart, heal the soul, and awaken the consciousness. And isn't that what we need? Yeah, what a week. What a week. Lots of stuff going on.
You got enough juice in your cans now?
I do.
Okay, good.
Think I'm ready to go. A little, you know, you come out. It's beautiful in Seattle, by the way.
Yeah.
The sun. I was going to say the moon. What a Freudian slip. The sun is out.
Is it still there?
It is.
The moon?
I don't know about the moon.
There are some mornings lately. It's been barely still visible. Barely.
Yeah.
But there's just so much sun. It's amazing.
It's beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. And
you're amazing.
Oh, thank you. So are you.
It's like having two sunshines.
I know.
Oh, what? Man, where does he come up with these? Just throw them out there.
I know, but it brought to mind walking on sunshine.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I know.
You got to do it. You got to do it. So if you do not already have a smile in your heart, we hope we'll put one there. And let that smile from your heart go through your whole self and out into the world. Maybe that will help things a little bit. It's always good to remember that, there's sunshiny people. Yeah, all you got to do is tune in, and here we are. That's right. Benny's so cute this morning, by the way.
Smiling and nodding.
Sometimes, yes, he's smiling and nodding, which makes him so adorable. And if you have people in your life that smile and nod at you, let them know.
Yeah.
I like it. Mm-hmm. More of that.
Pass it around.
Pass it around. Pass it around. That's right. I am just going to put out a couple of little ads here about me. I'm the owner of Reiki Oasis, located right here in the greater Seattle area. And you can find out about me at ReikiOasis.com. You can sign up for workshops and sessions and everything at schedule.ReikiOasis.com. Thank you to Indigo Hawk, my amazing webmaster. I do not know what goes on in your head, but I'm so grateful for it. That's right. And I've got some wonderful things coming up, a Reiki 1 class, Saturday, June 1st, if you want to learn Reiki. It's a great way to get into all kinds of things, to understand the vibrational, energetic nature of the world that we live in, and also to kind of wake you up a little bit as to who and what you may be all about. And Reiki is all natural. There's no GMOs. There's no bad side effects. It works with, I'm going to say, the energies and the powers of all that is, and divine even. So you can bring all that in. You can sign up for the class at schedule.ReikiOasis.com. Thank you to all the Patreons that help support this show. You can go to patreon.com/The Loretta Brown Show if you want to be part of that community, because every dollar helps keep me on the air. This is live radio. We are alive. We try to be alive. We do our best to be alive. Our hearts are beating with joy. That's right. I don't know, you know, sometimes I'm just wondering if you're listening to me out there. So I just, you know, I just throw things in today. It's a little bit of playfulness. I do have a great trip to Egypt coming up October 2nd through the 16th. If you would like to join me, you can find out more by sending me an email, ReikiOasis@gmail.com or Facebook.com/EgyptTravelsWithLoretta. I take groups every year. We always have a sacred, special soul tribe a trip that is very, very selective. I only take a dozen people, and we have a wonderful time. It will change your life. I also want to put out there that I was asked a few weeks ago by my friend Giles Hasselman, who is from the Netherlands, to be part of a free online summit called The Empowered Human: Move Beyond Limitations and Fulfill Your Soul's Purpose While Experiencing Joy, Abundance, and Love. And this free online summit, The Empowered Human, has been going on all month. Giles interviewed 25 amazing people for this summit, to include me. And there's still time to join this community. My show is either airing today or tomorrow. I think it depends on where you're at on the planet. You can go to Facebook.com/ReikiOasis to find out how to click on the link to sign up. You can also go to bit.ly/Loretta EHS, meaning Empowered Human Summit.
Ooh, pick me.
Yes.
There's also a replay of this show on Mondays
at
6 a.m. too. Do not forget that.
Thank you.
Because we do have people calling in wondering where you are. And originally, we're on Thursdays at 8. So, don't be confused. There's twice of you a week.
Twice of me.
You get a double dose of Loretta.
Walking on sunshine.
Bright.
Twice a week.
Super bright.
Bright, super bright. And these shows are archived. Yeah. You can download them for free and listen to them over and over and over again. And to the people watching on YouTube, hi there. I don't forget you're there. I just love, you know, what I'm doing. I love you, too.
It's the best, newest feature we have here for the Mighty KKNW.
Yeah, I've had a lot of people really positive about it. Going, oh, wow, it's really great to see you on YouTube. I'm like, hey, who knew? So here it is. My claim to fame.
Yep.
Look, Mom.
Visually and auditorily.
Yeah, my mom was always like, oh, you're not on stage all the time, honey.
I think I am, so that's where I belong.
I think your twin boys are, Benny.
They're a little bit one of each right now, and then they'll switch the next day.
Yeah. How old are they?
Oh, wait. No, I take that back. It might be one of them that kind of is a little more of a diva.
Yeah.
I play that.
I was thinking about that. I bet I know which
the
one
attention,
that is.
He loves the attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the other one's a little bit more...
Reserved. I'll say that.
Shy or...
Well, not even shy, though, because, like I said, the next day they'll flip.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they take turns. They draw a number in the morning and
hashtag life of twins.
That's right.
You know?
Yeah. So anyway, this week has been very intense. We've been under the influence of that powerful full moon in Scorpio that we experienced last Saturday. Whereas new moons are a time for manifestation, full moons are a time to let go. So we're in at what's called a letting go time between the full moon and the new moon. Scorpio is related to transformation, death, and rebirth. And this full moon has been telling us that death has to occur for rebirth to happen. Now, a lot of people carry around a level of heaviness, pain, or suffering. We all have this fear of death, but it doesn't have to be such a suffering. We can simply acknowledge the cycle of death, life, transformation, rebirth. We can get more comfortable with it, realizing we do come back. And we can also do what we can, and maybe we need help to do this, to look at the painful moments and see what they have allowed you to achieve or to learn. If that potent full moon has been making you feel heavy, soften. Soften toward yourself and be more kind, be more mindful, be more present with how you are showing up, not only for yourself, but for those around you, because, you know, we do live in this oneness of all that is, and we affect each other. So, you know, I like to remind people we're all in this together. Somebody told me one time, you know, point your weapons outward. That's a martial arts play. And I would hope that we just don't have any weapons. That would be lovely. I suppose it's my Pollyanna world, huh? But there it is. Also this week, the sun moved into Gemini on May 21st. Be mindful you don't get caught up in your mind and overthinking. And by the way, don't believe everything you think. There's false news in your head. Uh-oh. So Gemini is concerned with facts and figures and wanting to know. And you're going to want to know some things from the show today. You're going to want to stay tuned in. I have a great guest. And if you feel a desire to go on a quest for the truth, your truth or someone else's truth, you're going to want to get some of the information that my guest puts out. And I'll bring her on in just a minute. But I'm just making a little bit of a cliffhanger. Don't go away, right? And also today, May 23rd, Mars is square the wounded healer Chiron. Chiron recently moved into Aries for the first time in 50 years and is going to be there until 2027. And Aries rules Mars. So Mars squares Chiron. Chiron's in Aries. Aries rules Mars. Sounds kind of scary, right? So pay attention to this, because what this means is, since Aries is the first sign of the zodiac, it represents our identity, how we act and assert ourselves, and it really has to do with our primary woundedness, the woundedness of our own identity. So during this time, you might find it difficult to act and assert yourself, or
You might second guess your actions. You might feel clumsy and inadequate. But it's really asking us to heal these wounds. And so there may be things that come in our life that will make us look at that, and then we're going to have a lot of help. And remember that you don't have to constantly go, why me? What's going on? You're not a victim. You might have been victimized. Maybe bad things happened to you, but you know you are a creator. You're a creator and a co-creator, and we're in a wonderful time of watching things shift. Let's put it that way. And that's a great segue to bring my guest on today, Dina Merriam. She's the founder and the convener of the Global Peace Initiative of Women. Global Peace Initiative of Women. She's a devotee of Paramahansa Yogananda and a student of the great Vedic texts, and she brings spiritual resources to address critical global challenges such as conflict, social justice, ecological scarring of the earth, and gender balance. And in her latest book, The Untold Story of Sita, An Empowering Tale for Our Time, Dina takes a new look at the classic Ramayana by tearing away the patriarchal lens through which the story is traditionally viewed. And whereas in the traditional telling, Sita is a secondary figure, in this account, this reading of the story, the sacred feminine, Sita, is predominant. Welcome to the show, Dina. It's such a pleasure to have you.
Thank you, Loretta. It's wonderful to be here.
Yeah. I just loved your book. I was telling you before the show that, you know, I quite often read books, and I have a lot of books to read. Sometimes I skim through them, you know, in order to do the radio show. But I had read through the book, and then I was woke very early this morning to stick my nose back in there and read through sections of it again. And it just is such a blessing. What led you to write this book? And that, maybe that's a big question.
Well, you know, it's my second book. The first book, My Journey Through Time, I recount how my memories of previous births came back to me over a period of some 20 years. And it was either by visiting a place or by having someone come into my life, and I saw themes emerge. And so I saw that it was a beautiful karmic web, really tapestry. And so I learned so much by looking into the past. And so I was in another situation a few years ago where I was in a pilgrimage in India, going to a place, Ayodhya, which is the birthplace of Ram, where some of the story unfolds. And I had these visions, which in my mind I understood to be a memory of a time when I lived there during the life of Sita as a servant in the household. And, I mean, whether I actually lived that life or whether I was just able to tune into the being who did live that life, I don't know. But it was a revelation because I saw not only was the story different from the way it's depicted today, mm-hmm. as it's been now come through so many millennia through the patriarchal lens, but it gave me a peek into a time, into a higher era, a time when there was much more balance and harmony on Earth, when we were much more in the unity consciousness of the natural world, when women and men were had equal places. And I saw that recapturing that vision is important for us as we are now moving back into a higher age. So can we recapture something that has been lost in the last few millennia as we've gone through this descending cycle, and can we recapture that? So I've learned many things in the process of kind of attuning myself to this story.
You said so much in there, and this is going to be a rich and full conversation. I'm just excited about it. I want to fill in a couple of things for the listeners, because, you know, I never quite know who's listening. We've got a lot of listeners. Can you talk a little bit about what you said, moving back into a higher age and the yuga theory of history? Can you lay a little groundwork for us there?
Yes, and I go into that in the book. In the Western understanding of history, it's linear. We moved out of caves and then started agricultural communities and then so and so and so on, using metals. And And so it's all linear development from uncivilized to civilized. And that just looks at the material development of our society. The Eastern concept looks at the spiritual development as more important than what was happening on the material plane. So they view history as cyclical, and the cycles have to do with the position of our solar system within the Milky Way galaxy as we rotate through it. There are times when we're closer to the center, or when our Earth is closer to the center, when spiritual perception is heightened, and then there are times when we're further from that spiritual center, the center of magnetism, where our spiritual perception is weaker. So they see four cycles in a 25,000-year period. So it doesn't really contradict the Western concept, because as our spiritual perception is darkened, we focus more on the material world, so we focus more on material development. But as our spiritual perception is heightened, what does that mean? That means we're more aware of the spiritual forces. We're less focused on the material world and more focused on what's happening in the spiritual planes. So it's more kind of an interdimensional consciousness where we can see the higher beings and we're interacting with them. And as we move more into the material age, that perception is much weaker. And so there are always people, you know, who have that perception, but those are the sages, very few. The general state of humanity is all we can see is the material universe. And according to these calculations, we've moved out of the darkest period, the Kali Yuga, the material age, and we're moving into the next phase, which gives us an understanding of subtler properties of electricity and subtler forces at work in the universe. So I was interested in looking at what it would be like this narrative of Vamasita unfolds during what's called the Treta Yuga. There's the Satya Yuga, the highest stage, the Treta Yuga, the Dwapara Yuga, and the Kali Yuga. And so we've come out of the Kali Yuga, according to many people, and have now entered the Dwapara Yuga. But this story unfolds at a time of the descending Treta Yuga. So there's still a lot of spiritual knowledge, but it's decreasing as humanity is focusing more and more on the development of what we call civilization.
Oh, I love what you just said. There's a hope in what you say, but there's also this, like you say, and you know, we're coming out of the darkest time, the Kali Yuga, the materialistic realm. And I was listening, thinking while you were talking, like, because you made a comment, like, we're, you know, once again, we're moving back into that higher realm or spiritual, you know, becoming more spiritually aware. And yet we're also seeing the growth of technology. And I know a lot of people have brought up on my show different things like, well, you know, what about AI and how does that work into whatever? And I think one of my guests one time said they called this the time of reckoning. Can you just kind of speak to that from the place that you're speaking from?
You know, I think that all of these technologies are neutral. They can be used for benefit or they can be used for harm. It depends on the wisdom with which we use them. It's like atomic energy or like the Internet. Now, the Internet, many people said, was a gift from higher forces. Mm-hmm. It had the potential, and it has done that, to create a much greater sense of unity among the human community. So for the first time, we're seeing ourselves as a global community. But at the same time, it has the potential for harm. And if one has, you know, all the negative impulses that exist within us, greed, anger, fear, the Internet can heighten those things. So the Internet itself is a neutral force, and it could be used for positive or negative. And the danger is that we are now developing technologies without the accompanying wisdom to know how to use them wisely. And many people said, you know, what happened to Atlantis is they were at a stage where they also had these technologies to manipulate life, and they misused them. And so it's. I think that's why there's such an urgency with spiritual awakening, because if we don't develop the wisdom to use these technologies, they could be very destructive. I mean, already we see we're destroying, a million species are going extinct. Now, that's not coming from a place of wisdom. It's coming from a place of ignorance. I mean, it's becoming more and more apparent that how dangerous our ignorance is.
Yeah.
AI can be, again, as a neutral thing, mm-hmm. it can be used in a destructive way or it can be used in a positive way.
I totally agree with what you said. Somebody else said something to the extent of the concern being that technology is growing faster than we're growing, and that I believe you're right. The wisdom to know what to do with these powers or these forces, I suppose, might be part of that. And you know, knowing that the mastery of the self, you know, like what about our own mind? You know, our own lower natures. Can we take care of that? Can we work together as a community? Because, you know, when we look out across what's happening, you know, politically and environmentally and in our country, we're at such odds with each other. Yeah.
I think that what we're seeing is also that the structures that have existed are really Kali Yuga structures. I mean, they're not structures that reflect a higher consciousness, and so they're crumbling. And Joanna Macy, the Buddhist ecologist, said that you can focus your energy on tearing down what's not working or on building the new. And so we try to direct people toward the visioning process. You know, how do we first you have to have a vision before you can manifest it. So how do we vision a higher society? And, I mean, one of the interesting things about what's happening in the Ramayana is that Ram, who is the essence of Dharma, this concept of Dharma, which means alignment with the higher principles of the universe, was working to try to create Dharma as the foundation for that civilization. So we've gotten very far away from that. I mean, you look around and there's corruption everywhere. I mean, it's but it's all coming out. I think it was hidden before, and now it's all coming out. And that's one of the benefits. There's no really transparency. I mean, you can't hide anymore. You know, corruption is eventually going to reveal itself. And so I think we're witnessing the breakdown of structures that are no longer able to hold a higher consciousness. Mm-hmm. And what I'm interested in is what are the new manifestations that are emerging?
Yeah. Yeah, the breakdown. I was thinking while you were talking that, you know, the process of healing sometimes is opening that, draining it out. And like you say, I think we've all been a little surprised at what's been going on that we knew was going on, but wow, to the level that it's been happening is a little startling for a lot of people, which, by the way, has created a lot of, unhappiness and lack of joy, you know, and among my people, you know, like, I don't know how you're running into that. Like, how are people dealing with this? And I'm talking about people of higher consciousness, you know.
We find, because we've been doing a lot of gatherings with young ecologists who have a spiritual practice, and the pain that they're going through, mm-hmm. and the sense of being just witnessing it and being helpless to stop it. How do you turn this massive boat around? And for young people, it's particularly poignant because this is their future.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about 20 years. Well, okay, we'll all be 20 years older, but these young people will just be in their prime in 20 years. You know, so I think that there is a sense of hope of not being able to do much. And I think that's what we have to counter, because every effort makes a difference. You know, it's like that 100th monkey, which is, it's so true. And we have to remember that every effort, more and more people who wake up, eventually we're going to hit that 100th monkey, and a higher consciousness is just going to manifest on a collective scale. And so the question is, when can we get to that 100th monkey in time? You know, to really turn things around and to avoid more suffering or greater suffering.
Yeah. 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 And I think that's the big concern. You know, are we going to make it? Somebody come in this week and they said, Loretta, is humanity going to become extinct? And I was like, well, I hope we're going in the right direction. What do you say, Dina? I don't know.
Well, we may evolve. I mean, it may be that we're, I think, at an evolutionary leap point now, mm-hmm. where we have to evolve into something higher. And I think part of it is also connecting to the cosmos and realizing that we live in the living universe and there's life all around and that we have to feel connected to the life all around. And I mean, I think that the consciousness that I see shifting with young people, who so many of them are turning away from organized religion, but are healing themselves through the earth and connecting so deeply with the earth.
Yes, yes.
And that's their deity at the moment. It's like, I'm going to focus on the earth. You know, I'm tired of all this doctrine. I'm tired of all this fear-mongering. It's like, let me connect to the earth. And I see that as a very positive sign.
Oh, yes, that so resonated with me. And, you know, even personally for myself and for others, I'm like, get outside. Go outside. Take your shoes off. Roll around. You'll be fine. You'll feel better. Take a walk in the forest, you know. But,
well, there's a science to that, too. They say the vibrations of the earth, that's why they tell you to walk barefoot and just have your feet touch the earth, you know, for a little bit. Because the vibrations have rebalanced the body prana. With the body energy systems. And so there is a science to that as well.
I love that. We're going to take a little station break, and this is Loretta Brown. My guest today is Dina Merriam. She's written a couple of books. We're going to come back and talk a little bit more about The Untold Story of Sita, an empowering tale for our time. And, of course, we're going to talk about unity consciousness, so don't go away. We'll be right back.
Energy is powerful. It's all around us, mysterious, full of potential. Directing positive, healing energy to raise your vibrational rate through Reiki can change your life. Reiki Master Loretta Brown has relieved stress, sadness, anger, and even helped clients lose weight, stop smoking, and end sleep disorders. Worldwide, people have sought out Reiki Oasis. If you want help with your dis-ease, visit ReikiOasis.com. Harness life's energy. Visit ReikiOasis.com today.
New message.
The Department of the Social Security Administration. The reason of this call is to inform you that your Social Security number has been suspended for suspicion of illegal activity. If you do not contact us immediately, your account will be deactivated. For more information about this case file, press 1 or call immediately our department number. 326.
This is a scam. Thieves are misusing the Social Security Administration's authority and phone schemes to trick you into giving them money or personal information. They state there is a problem with your Social Security number or account. They claim there's been suspicious or fraudulent activity and you could be arrested or face other legal action. They even spoof SSA's main customer service telephone number on caller ID. Don't believe them. Don't provide any information. SSA employees will never threaten you for information or promise benefits in exchange for information. In those cases, the call is fraudulent. Just hang up. If you suspect you've been contacted by an SSA scammer, call the Social Security Fraud Hotline at 1-800-269-0271.
Alternative Talk 1150. We're on your radio at 1150 AM. We're on your HD radio at 98.9 Channel 3.
So many ways to listen.
We're on the web at 1150kknw.com. Streaming live audio and video as well as MP3 archives of many of our shows.
So many ways to listen.
And now, we're on your smartphone or tablet. Download our free app in the Apple App Store or Google Play and take Alternative Talk 1150 anywhere you go.
So many ways to listen.
Exploring new territory every day. This is Alternative Talk 1150.
Or waiting for her book.
Yeah, that's right. Walk it on sunshine. Yeah. Anyway, welcome back to the original Loretta Brown Show. Always thank you to Benny Mathers, my producer. Where would I be without you? I'd be out there.
Yeah, knocking at the door waiting to come in.
I'd be going, hey, did you forget
Let
about
me? In,
me?
Please.
That's right.
Please.
Please. My guest today is Dina Merriam, and she is just an amazing woman. You should check out her books. She wrote one called My Journey Through Time, and we're going to talk about The Untold Story of Sita, an empowering tale for our time. And Dina, can you tell us a little bit how this book has so many great messages, but what makes it different from the traditional Ramayana
traditional Ramayana. Well, there are two major. There are several major issues.
Yes.
One of them is first, I want to say that this is one of the oldest stories that we have, older than Abraham, older than the pyramids. Ram lived around 5,000 BC, so it really does come from another. We have very little information from that time. You know, there's archaeological stuff that could. I mean, that just tells us remnants, but we don't. This is one of the most complete narratives of something that took place during that time. And even in the traditional narrative, Sita is seen as a kind of a devi. She is just found in a field. She's self-manifested, and so she's at the very minimum a great rishi, great yogi. Mm-hmm. At that time, there were many women teachers and yogis and rishis, and the memory of them, the way it's come down to us, is they're considered the wives of the rishis instead of being rishis in their own right. So that's all later interpretation. But at that time, it was known there were these great women saints. So the way the narrative is that Ram is sent into exile soon after his marriage to Sita. From some promise his father had given to one of his three wives. Sita accompanies him through the forest, and basically it's because she knows the forest. She can communicate with the animals through visual transmission. She knows all the herbs, the medicinal herbs. She knows the food. It was at the time when agriculture was just spreading, and they were in their journey through the jungle. She was bringing agriculture to those forest communities. But then at the end, there's a very rapacious and greedy demon king. We have some of those in our world today who's consuming all the resources and threatening the rishis who have these forest hermitages, which were the first, these forests were the first educational institutes. So she's kidnapped by this demon king, as in the traditional narrative, and Ram rescues her, and they return back to their kingdom in Ayodhya. 14 years have passed. And then because society is not happy that their queen had lived with another king for a year during the kidnapping, Ram is forced to banish her to the forest. That's the way the story is told.
Mm-hmm.
I never found that compelling.
No.
And after I wrote my book, I consulted with some Swami friends of mine, and they said, well, that last part of the banishment was a later addition. It was the rhythm is different. The it's all written in a different style. It's clearly an addition. So then my question was, why? Why was that added that Sita had to be banished? And so these are the questions that arose in my mind. And then I realized that Sita, also being this great being, was not just kidnapped, but allowed herself to go into the kingdom so that she could work from within and Ram could work without, and so they could neutralize this negative force that was creating so much toxicity in that whole region. And so that when this issue, I brought scholars together in India a few months ago to launch the book, and this question of why was that later added? And some of the male scholars, all the women said, well, that was a later addition. It didn't happen that way. But the male scholars said, well, he was a king, and he had to show society that this was unrighteous, and so he was setting an example for society. And I said, is it dharmic to banish an innocent woman? That doesn't make sense at all. Mm-hmm. Ram, who had come to set the standard for a dharma, would not have done something that was against the laws of righteousness. So I realized that this was the beginning of the patriarchy. When this last part was added, that was a result of the patriarchal sort of takeover of society, where the women rishis were just now being called the wives of the great rishis, and where, you know, a lesson to society, stay away from your husband, you're going to be banished. And that's very deep in the culture, and that is very deep still in our society, globally. So how do we undo that?
Yeah.
How do we undo that conditioning that has been, it's in the story of Adam and Eve. It was Eve who led to the downfall, you know, led to the banishment. I don't see it that way. I think it was the end of the Satya Yuga, that Garden of Eden, and both of them got attracted to materialism. And so in both East and West, there's the victimization of women, women leading to the downfall. And it's deep. It's the conditioning is very deep, and it's very hard to undo that conditioning. And that's what I'm trying to do.
That is well said, and yes. Yes to you. Thank you for this book. I was thinking while you were talking that, yeah, we have the Adam and Eve. We also follow, you know, if I take a look at the path of what happened to the goddess from the ancient fertile goddesses through to the point where we do have the Mother Mary, but she is not a goddess. You know,
she
got demoted a little bit. And
So
this story, the untold story of Sita, then, is it's telling the story through people that lived with her. And I have to ask you, because this book is really written in first person, and for the listeners, it goes through several lifetimes of the main character, which. I have to ask, is it you? Is this past life recall for you? Like,
yes.
Yeah. That's
what
I thought.
The way I experienced this was as the servant in the household, the servant Manakshi, who experiences certain things as a servant in the household, and then she dies while Sita is in exile with Ram, and then is reborn later and recaptures some of the story from one of the other servants who was very elderly but still alive, who she finds.
Yeah.
There are many layers to the story.
There's many layers to the story, and it's a good read, by the way, everybody, The Untold Story of Sita. It's a really good read, and it is heartfelt. It brings you into your heart, and I have to tell you that the traditional telling of that tale, for me, also just didn't create much inspiration. It's all exciting, and then you're like, what? What happened? Where's the good part?
You know, to me, these are very real presences. And what I experienced was the love. I mean, first of all, there are karmic intertwinings, which I've always been fascinated. My first book talks a lot about how karma works. And when you see the servant, how she's reborn, you see a lot of how the patterns of karma are coming through. But also the story is one of love. I mean, Sita's love for the servants. It was a time when servants held a respected place in the household. And there was a love relationship and gratitude for, you know, it was a noble thing to serve a noble family. And so this interchange of love and Sita's love for the forest, for the plants, for the animals, for the rivers. She calls the river her daughter, you know. And that's the unity consciousness that I think we need to recapture. Mm-hmm. And that's the unity consciousness that existed at that time. You know, they may not have had rockets and skyscrapers and all that, but there was this love and unity consciousness that pervaded the natural world.
Yeah, in the book, she says the river calls her, and she goes and talks to it, and I really like that. I have a quote from your book I wrote down. It goes along with what you were saying. In your book, you write, "As I wondered at the intensity and immensity of the love I felt, I heard the words, 'This is the love Sri Ram brought to earth. He awakened a new quality of love.' I understood that he and Mata Sita came to unlock the love that is encoded in all creation, so humanity could advance in its evolution and fulfill its potential." Can you expand on that just a little bit? Because there's a lot in there, the love that's encoded in creation, and for us to fulfill our potential. What is our potential, do you think?
Well, the love that I experienced in that vision was such an overwhelming love. I've experienced it a few times in my life. It's beyond anything that we feel, you know, when you're in love with someone. That's like a little drop of this all-encompassing love. and it's hard to find the words for it. And I realized that that is the fabric of creation. That is the most powerful force in creation. Anything can be accomplished through tapping into this love. It's very hard in our normal waking consciousness to tune into that because, you know, our thoughts are all over the place and we're worried about this and that. But when we, which is why we try to meditate, when we quiet ourselves and tap into our kind of heart center, we can feel a drop of this love. And everything is geared toward trying to awaken that because that's the source of happiness. You know, you talked about earlier about people feeling down and depressed. And I mean, you look at the addiction, opioid addiction in our country. We're a depressed country. And because we've wandered so far away from our source, which is within us. And so this is why the spread of spiritual practice is such an important thing now, whichever kind you do, to come back to that love that is our very nature. It's nothing we have to find or get. It is who we are. It's just that we've lost sight of it and we've wandered away from it through all the distractions and the things that take us up. But the key to happiness is this love, feeling it again. And one can get glimpses of it. You know, you get a taste of it. You have, you know, an experience that gives you a sense of your true nature. And that's just, you know, to remind us.
That I'm sitting here connecting to that as I can, you know, realizing that, yeah, that is exactly, it's what our heart wants. We want that unity consciousness. We do. I think it's, like you say, it's the key to our happiness, our joy. And getting back to, as I say, helping each other, we're all in this together. Yeah.
So applying this to our situation,
yes,
right now.
Because
we always have to come back to, you know, what does this mean as we, you know, move on to the next moment. You know, we're seeing a lot of pain and anger, polarization come up, and the key is, I think, it's not easy, because how do we not get angry when we see injustice and when we see manipulation and all the negative things that are causing suffering? But the key is, I think, not to come out of the place of compassion and love, but to see what needs to break down, to see what's causing the harm, the structures that are no longer relevant to a higher age. And there are a lot of people who are going to resist this because they've benefited from it. Mm-hmm. And yet, how do we not create more polarization? And this is what I hear people in the spiritual circles talking about. How do we not get angry? You know, and of course there is, you know, there is a righteous anger which you can hold without coming out from the heart, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is not really an anger, but it's a place of seeing, you know, no, this doesn't work anymore. You know, this is not righteous. This is not dharmic behavior, and we can't accept this as a society. And yet, feeling compassion for those who are going through the suffering.
Yeah, I think there's a there's probably a lot of people's hearts sort of calling to them as they're listening to this, because, you know, we are on the planet at this time for a reason. I'm thinking in the book you have the servant who, you know, Sita basically tells her to attend to the queen that was horrible. Let's just put it that way without giving
responsible
away
responsible for, yeah. For right for their
right.
Exile, yeah.
Yeah, she was responsible for Sita's exile. That's exactly right. So Sita tells the servant, I want you to take care of her. And there's this whole thing in there of, you're asking me to what? Take care of the person who treated you so badly? How can I even do that, right? And I think there's something potent in that related to what you just said. And if you could talk to that. And I think it also ties into my question of what can we learn from the character of Sita, and how is she a role model for us today?
Because their love is unconditional. Mm-hmm. And Sita and Ram understood that their banishment to the forest was for a greater good, and this woman was the vehicle for that to happen. So some people have said in the spiritual circles that the current administration is the vehicle for the decline of institutions that are no longer working. And so if you take the long view, you can see that everything has a purpose. It, you know, if you zero in on it, it doesn't look that way. So for the servant, you know, it was very painful for her to have to be in the presence of this woman who was giving such so negative. But Sita wanted her to be able to rise above it, and to be able to have compassion. And then when she saw her state, how she was unkempt and unclean and not eating, at a certain point she did have compassion for her. But it was probably the most difficult thing she had done.
Yeah.
And so I think that's, yeah, we're facing a similar situation, you know, in our country now. People we disagree with, how do we have compassion, even though we may find positions so, you know, so opposed to what we believe?
Yeah.
It's a challenge.
It's a challenge, and, you know, because we want to bring this down to the practical level, so how do we do that? What is your advice to people? How do we stay in that compassionate place?
Well, I think the most important thing now is really the visioning process. And there is a lot of new young energy coming into our political scene. They also need guidance. And so, you know, what is going to be, what kind of nation do we want to create? That's, I think, we're at a crossroad. What kind of nation do we want to be? And I think if we can have a strong enough vision as a collective, I think we can manifest it. You know, which means that those who hold on to the old, a lot of them are doing it out of fear. People are afraid of change. You know, I'm not talking necessarily about the people in administration who are benefiting. I'm talking about the American people who may be afraid of change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and who may just be kind of swept into this this dynamic that is unfolding. But I see the current situation as a temporary one, as a temporary, you know, you take two steps forward and then you take a step back. There are always forces that try to pull you back.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, it can't win over because the movement of time is forward. So this may be a momentary blip if you take the long view.
Yeah.
But doesn't mean there won't be suffering. I mean, you know, the situation with the environment is a very serious one. The situation, I mean, we have all these tornadoes now unfolding in the Midwest. Why isn't anybody saying why?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the health situation of the country, we're talking about healthcare. Why isn't anybody saying, why are we so sick? Is it because of all the chemicals in the environment? I mean, I read yesterday that this country puts thousands of chemicals out before they're tested. So instead of asking the why, we're just trying to put Band-Aids on a hemorrhaging. You know, instead of just trying to give everybody health care, we should be trying to prevent people from getting sick. You know, regulating these chemicals, regulating our water, and making sure we have clean water and clean food and clean air.
Yeah. Go ahead, sorry.
But I was going to say, so these are the questions that we as a people have to step up and say, you know, we need to do things differently.
You know, there's a part in the book where Sita is visiting with, Armitage or, you know, where there's a bunch of holy people, right? I'm just putting it in simple. And she's upset because they've cut down all these trees.
Right.
And can you just share with us her solution? Just talk about that a little bit, because we are looking at massive destruction on our planet. Yeah.
Well, she talked about the lack of respect for the trees and for the animal life that depend on the trees. So there's a whole ecosystem, and the trees are part of it. So if you just go take the trees down, you're disturbing the whole balance within that area. And you know, in a place where you understand the connection, everything will be affected by that. And so she and her father come to this way of, so the sage says, you know, so should we not cut down the trees to build our hermitages? And she said, well, you know, obviously there's a need for building. And she says to him, plant two trees for every tree that you take down. You know, and now I would add to that, don't take down the old growth, you know, the trees that have lasted for 2,000 years.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we also in our country take down those magnificent elder trees.
Yeah, we do.
So it's, again, it's respecting the forest and seeing them not as trees, not as commodities, but as life.
Yeah. Well, and there's this whole idea, once again, of the unity consciousness, but there's a great honoring in this sort of an idea that here's this land, here are these trees, here are these animals live here, you know, there's this. And, you know, can we respect it? And maybe we can even say, is it all right if we do this? And then give back, you know, don't just strip things bare. But become a part of that whole thing. This might be a big question. How do the lives of Mata Sita and Sri Ram exemplify a balance of the masculine and feminine qualities and energies? And do we need them both right now?
I think that's a very important question. Because much of my work is focused on bringing back the divine feminine, the understanding of that. And at a certain point, I realized that that doesn't mean the weakening of the masculine, mm-hmm. and that the higher masculine energy is very much needed now. And what we've experienced through the last cycle, we talk about patriarchy, is a lower, because we were in a lower cycle, part of the cycle, a lower masculine energy, one of domination. But we need that higher masculine wisdom, which is just as essential, and that's what Ram represents, which is one of balance, of working with the feminine, of providing a certain wisdom and guidance, and partnering, and so their roles are different. You know, when Sita goes into the demonic kingdom, she's working on the inner field while he's working on the outer. He does the outer battle while she does the inner work. And I think the feminine works a lot on the inner planes. The masculine has had a certain role in the outer planes, mm-hmm. on the outer field, and they need to be in balance and in harmony. I mean, if you have too much going on in the outer without the inner, then you have complete imbalance. But the same thing, you can't ignore the outer. So I think that finding the right balance is a challenge in our society right now. Especially when there's all this, among young people, all this gender questioning,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
which may be an outgrowth of things being out of balance. So, you know, we each have masculine and feminine aspects to ourselves, so we have to balance them within ourselves, and then maybe that will be reflected in our society. But we certainly need to reflect a lot on what is that higher masculine energy that we need to awaken right now.
Right. Yeah, I'm very aware of that, too, because I have a lot of men that come see me, and they're very confused. Who should I be, right? Like, where are our role models is kind of what I take a look at. Who can they model after? So we're coming to the end of our time. Dina, can you tell people where to find you, find out more about you, connect with you?
Well, I have a website, which is www.gpiw.org. That's GPIW for the Global Peace Initiative of Women. And we are on Facebook and we're on Twitter. My books are on Amazon. You can just do under Dina Miriam or The Untold Story of Sita. And we organize, in addition to my writing, we organize many gatherings both here in the U.S. and abroad, trying to awaken this higher consciousness.
I love that. So people can be a part of social change, and that is something we can do in the right direction. So Dina Miriam is my guest today, The Untold Story of Sita, an empowering tale for our time. Thank you so much. You blessed me by being on my show today. And
thank you,
yeah, go in grace. And To all the listeners, have a fantastic week. Enjoy the sun.